Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of the Polyton Civilization site.
Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua. With guest co-hosts.
Alexander the First.
CONMCB25.
We should thank Alex because he is our emergency guest co-host for the second time this season.
That's me. I'm the anti-Imran. He and I can't exist in the same place or there'll be a rupture in the space-time continuum.
Yeah, we can blame Imran's parents for dropping in unexpectedly for this.
So that means we have Imran's parents to blame for Alex being here? Gee, I don't know if we want to put it that way. Steven, I know your handle is ConMCB25. Where did that come from?
That came from the United States Navy, believe it or not. I'm a 22-year veteran now. I'm inactive, and CONMCB25 stands for Commanding Officer, Naval Mobile Construction Battalion 25, which is a CB battalion. I used to be a CB when I was both in the active Navy and the Naval Reserves.
That's a much better reason than what I was thinking, that you just mashed the keyboard. That makes more sense.
Yeah, it sure does.
I was going to ask, can we just call you Con Man, because that might be easier, but I'm not going to do that now.
Hey, everybody at Poly calls me Con. Feel free.
So, did you really hate Kirk that much?
Dan.
Yes, I did. I hated him with a passion. Welcome to Polycast number 55. I'm CONMCB25, otherwise known as Con at Apolyton, and I'm going to be one of your guest hosts today. We also have Cardamandua here.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, whenever you're listening to this.
We also have Dan Q, as usual.
Gobble, gobble.
And we also have Makalua.
Needs more caffeine.
And we have Alexander the First. Hi, Alex.
Hi, I'm back.
Well, we'll talk about our upcoming CD release, Polycast Favorites. And you can sing all you want.
Polycast Sing Along with Dan.
More like Polycast, don't let Dan sing along with you.
Oh, including the kids' release. Take me riding in a tank, tank.
Let's go riding in a Panzermobile. Let's take a ride in a tank. See the cannons go boom, boom, boom as we crush spearmen near and far. Boom, ba, boom, ba, boom,
boom. Okay.
Boom.
Okay.
Okay, enough of the singing and the musicals. Do we have actual Civ to talk about here?
This was fun.
The treads on the tank go.
Crush, crush, crush.
Today, mailbag, we read a letter from South Syria, also known as Thorburn, on the forums, with a lot of complaints. And
no.
With some griping, grumbling, and grousing.
That we responded nicely to.
In the news, we've discussed Firaxis sponsoring a Civilization IV colonization modding contest for certain American people, and new downloadable CivRev content for the low price of $1.25.
Senate, has anyone ever tried to use Theology Slingshot?
Greetings from the mailbag, where we address listener questions and comments.
We received an email from Sal Ciro, who goes by Thorburn. The title, Let's Get Civilized for a Moment.
Hello. My name is Sal, known as Thorburn on the forums. Though, admittedly, I am found on CFC forums more often, and I just got done listening to the latest episode of Polycast. Now, I generally enjoy listening to the show. However, I occasionally have to roll my eyes at certain remarks. Finally, after something said in this episode, I felt that I had to respond.
First off, Sal, thank you. We appreciate the time that you took to write this, and also appreciate that your criticism of us that you had in there was constructive and also had some elements of humor in it.
The topic that broke the camel archer's back was in reference to the cultural starts. It seems that whenever a realism topic comes up, You guys all pounce on it like a bunch of berserkers on a defenseless village. Is everybody there on the anti-realism side? Or are those who might like a few more realistic elements too afraid to speak up about it? You all constantly say that civilization is a game and is not meant to mimic reality. I understand that and I will even agree about some of the elements that you balk against. However, it is a game about the world for the world and therefore touches many different preferences. As no one there wants to speak up for the side of realism, then I will have to raise my voice for the oppressed. So, please, put away your whips for a minute while I exercise my freedom of speech.
I do not ever recall us saying that the game of civilization is quote-unquote not meant to mimic reality. We have said and have all agreed that where mimicking reality is not balanced in the game, and maybe cannot be balanced, at least reasonably so, then that translates into gameplay frustrations. And as this is a game that is meant for fun and enjoyment, if there are gameplay frustrations that result from adding another element of reality, or a greater degree of an element reality already present, then it either should be modified so that it is balanced for gameplay to remove that frustration, or removed entirely because of that. Now certainly, any element of realism that can be balanced for gameplay is welcome. It does not necessarily have to be positive in the sense that it is an advantage for the player. We've talked before about how if all events were just good or all events were just bad, that would not be balanced. As you say, Sal, Civ is, quote, a game about the world for the world and therefore touches many different preferences, unquote. But all the preferences cannot be touched upon, at least to their fullest extent, such as realism. In addition to gameplay balancing, as a commercial product, recognize that Firaxis as a developer and 2K as a publisher must take into account the mass appeal, and that's through positive reception from media and by players alike. If all people are seeing, like on an Amazon review page, or they're seeing in online reviews from gaming sites like GameSpot and GameSpy, to throw a couple out there, that there is this frustration and there's that frustration, then they're not likely going to pick up the game, and those who have bought it are likely not going to play very much of it or pick up anything else that has Civ on the title, or perhaps even, oh, Firaxis makes frustrating gameplay. But I think it boils down to that if you can mimic reality and it's fun for gameplay, then do it. Otherwise, you need to change it so it is, or it just should not be there.
So, the short version of what Dan just said is it's not...
In summary.
Yes.
It's not that we're anti-realism. We're just anti-realism when it's not balanced with the gameplay. Because some of the stuff we wouldn't mind seeing harder. But we also want it to be balanced and fun because, well, I can't speak for everybody else here. I'm not the type that wants to hit my head against a brick wall. I don't want to sit here and go, oh, I can't get past this point. Oh, I can't get past this point. I get enough frustration in other single-player games without having to have that from Civ. At least for me, it's not relaxing to have something ramp up the difficulty really, really high. That's not fun to me.
I think this is just another version of an argument I've heard several times or read several times over the years. What do you want? Do you want something that's fun, or do you want something that's going to simulate real life? And, you know, quite frankly, if I want to simulate real life, I'll just go play real life for a while.
We're coming to civilization to escape real life, whatever real life is for us, for a particular amount of time, whether it's a little bit or a lot, depending on what's going on in our life and how much time we have to devote to it. If the game really isn't going to allow us that escape, then why are we playing it again?
I have no idea.
Generally, we're just the counterbalance to the people that get upset when it's not perfectly accurate. We're saying, you know, simmer down, it's a game. And I think that's maybe part of what he's thinking when he says that we're on the anti-realism side. Mostly because I think we just to help people remember it's a game, it's supposed to be fun. The history part of it makes it fun, but like you said earlier, you don't want it to be cumbersome. Alexander was on a modding team that helped make it more realistic.
Yeah, with BTS, I was on the historically accurate units team. And if you look at the Babylonian Settler, it's based on my avatar.
Yes, Alex, I remember you saying that the last time you were on the show.
Yep.
But that was a while ago. There might be new listeners that don't know that.
New listeners.
Yeah, that's the funny part, right?
This just proves that history is cyclical, not linear.
I will start with the topic that got this started. Cultural link starts. Before I begin, I would like to add that somebody mentioned that The Sims and Civ 4 no longer have cultural categories. If, however, You look at the XML files, you will find that they do, in fact, have cultural identifiers such as Mediterranean, European, American, etc. Anyway, you are the you who would want to have cultural starts, and mention that it was an option in SIG 3 for those strange people who might like that kind of thing. Well, I guess I am one of those wackos.
Whoa, we never said wackos, that's what you called yourself.
We said maybe one of those kind of people, but we never defined it. Just kidding.
Oh.
Sorry. No, I think once in a while it might be fun to play a historically accurate type of game, but...
You know, I think last time we never really said that we were against it, just that it wasn't our style, but that the option ought to be there, because a lot of people have said they'd like that.
Exactly. It definitely has applicability in, say, an educational context, be it an elementary school, a high school, college or university, in addition to those who would like something that was more historically accurate than the standard Civ experience can provide.
Well, that's what scenarios are for, too.
There you go.
Who was it that made the scenario that was super accurate?
Rise and Fall, maybe?
I think that's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
Gabriel Trovato, yes, Rye.
Take this into consideration. If China starts next door to Rhone, and France starts a hop, skip, and a jump away from the Incans, then those civilizations will not be their respective civilizations. That, in effect, throws any arguments of what if out the window and makes the game purely fantasy. Yes, civilization is not necessarily a historical thing, but it is based on history. For me, the fantasy start, just like mixing up the leaders and traits of the civilizations, is for when I am bored of starting next to the same civs. Now, you may prefer the fantasy starts and that is fine. All I want is the option to start culturally. Currently, in order to do that, I have to enter the world builder, which ruins any aspect of exploration, and move the civs around the way I like it. This takes up too much time before even getting to play the game.
When you're saying that they will not be their respective civilizations, quote-unquote, you're right in that they will not be their respective civilizations in a historical sense, and as we're getting at, that's towards not reliving history but reimagining it to a degree. So that's fair enough to say that they're not the respective civilizations in a historical sense, but then to say this throws any arguments of what if out the window and makes the game purely fantasy? To me, fantasy are dragons and wizards and giant death robots. Not.
Yeah.
Where a civilization began geographically and who its neighbors were, of course had a great impact on how they developed, how well they developed, and whether or not they're still around today, if any form is a civilization. But, like, too many degrees of separation to go from historical sense to fantasy. There is an in-between, and that's what I think we're getting at, is the in-between between realism and total fantasy, where it is reasonable, it's probable if... Exactly, what if the Chinese had started on the Australian continent? And even there's a sense of realism. We're using the world map. Or what if just on this randomly generated map, the Russians started in a tropical environment? There are so many different combinations, but I don't think we can just go from reality to fantasy.
Exactly. Fantasy is like Warcraft. Purely history game would be Europa Universalis. So Civ is in between. It's like fantastic history.
Best of both.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
If somebody wants to make a mod and put in dragons and unicorns, I'd be okay with that.
I think they've got dragons in...
Fall from Heaven.
Thank you, yes.
That's right. They do have them, but no unicorns.
That's right. You've got to have the pretty fantasy creatures as well as the deadly ones.
On a related note, I enjoy the religion aspect of the game, but there are elements that need fixing in the same way. To me, there is something quite disturbing when Spain founds Buddhism, India founds Judaism, and the Aztecs found Christianity. Again, that is fine in a fantasy game. To me, religions should have a second requirement for establishment, whether it be a second technology, a specific resource, or even another religion in the country's borders, i.e. Judaism for Christianity, etc., or tying the religion to a specific culture type. For example, only Middle East culture civs can found Judaism or Islam. It would help to better control the religion issue and give a little order to the game. Of course, there would be the option that would allow for switching up in a more random fantasy game.
I think for you, Sal, from the perspective of the culturally linked starts which you prefer, what you're arguing has validity, for example, tying the religion to a specific cultural time. So if somebody wants such starts, I could see the preference if you decide that that's what I want, then that's perhaps what you end up seeing. But in general, again, having culturally linked starts being a default option in the game, I would say no to both of that. But as we said last episode, for people who want that, the option should be there, and you should be able to have that.
Yeah, have it on the menu as an option you can set.
I don't know. I believe in freedom of religion. I think the Chinese found Christianity. I don't have a problem with that.
I like Civ for the what-if things. What if the Incans came up with Christianity? What if somebody else comes up with Islam? It's different. It's interesting that way.
I agree. I like the variety. But some people have to relive history over and over and over. Oh, sorry.
That's what Europa Universalis is for.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking, that he needs to go be playing a different kind of game if he wants everything exactly the way it should have happened.
Yeah, that's definitely what Europa Universalis is for. Oh my gosh.
Because I got it recently and I keep trying to play my own little what-ifs out and it won't let me, dang it.
No, you have to mod it to do that.
Yeah.
While I am on the topic of religion, I have to ask, what does Firaxis have against Israel? I know that it is available in many mod forms, but why can't Firaxis include it in the official game themselves?
It's not that Firaxis doesn't want to have Israel or something like in there, but to make the game and sell the game, they have to avoid anything that's too much of a hot-button topic. It's like not having a certain German leader as a leaderhead. I mean, it's not quite the same level of ick. It's not ick at all. It's just that too many people would raise a fuss if they included Israel. So in the end, they have to not include it so that, I don't know, less people complain about it not being in there than people that would complain about it being in there. They have to go for the rippling the waters the least, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I say if they can put Solomon's Temple in the game, they can put Solomon in.
That's...
Yeah, sure, they put in the Hebrews with King Solomon. They don't have to put in, you know, David Ben-Gurion or any of these current politicians.
No, but Israel in and of itself, just existing, is kind of controversial, is the thing.
In 1000 BC?
Well, not in 1000 BC, but there's modern people playing it. That's the problem.
They put Abu Bakr in Civ 3, and he was Muhammad's father-in-law.
But how many people actually realized that played the game?
I don't know. I did.
Yeah, and you like to read history stuff.
Well, I have a degree.
Yes. People that play Civ that have a history degree that would actually know that is a very small amount. I mean, there's what they can get away with and there's what they can't get away with.
So they should just call them the Hebrews and not specify that they're Israel, and nobody will know, except for people with history degrees.
And people who have just listened to this episode. Good job, Dan.
All eight of them. So you'll get 8 complaint emails, Dan.
It's one of those sticky issues like with the religions. So what do we include, what do we not include? Because either way, someone's going to get offended. That's what they have to watch for.
Yeah.
So they just got to worry about who they're going to offend the most.
Exactly.
It's okay to have Stalin and Mao, we just can't have King David.
Also, why is the limit of religions set to only 7? I know that is a question that has been brought up numerous times, and that there is a mod out there somewhere that changes that, though I can't seem to find it. However, I still have to raise the point. The standard response seems to be testing has showed that 7 religions is the ideal number of religions. I would absolutely agree with that. On a standard size map with a handful of civs, if you play on a larger map, with many, all available, civs, however, it is very limiting, especially given the importance and advantages of religions in Civ 4. Not only that, given all of the attacks against realism, it seems to me that not including some of the earlier religions is quite counter to the what-if argument. I mean, they only included the top current religions. However, what if Rome never would have converted to Christianity? The dominant religion in the world just might be Romanism, but we can never test that out as it is not even an option.
I think we've said in earlier episodes, and say it again, that a map size is larger than standard. Having more than 7 religions makes sense, or at least can make sense as long as it's balanced. So I think we're in agreement there.
I forget who was on. It was one of the Phyraxians, but was saying that it had to do with also with the interface balance. 7 fit just about right in the interface, and trying to crowd more in there just made the interface too crowded and cluttered.
They're just trying to avoid offending people by putting in too many religions. Okay, I was being sarcastic.
Anyway, another issue that I have deals with game flow and balance. That is, the balance of resources and the like and the superpower flow through time. I understand the need for it in multiplayer. However, it really takes away the challenge, and in my opinion, the fun of the game. It can be quite boring when the winner of the game is narrowed down to a couple of civs, out of many, by the time the Middle Ages rolls around, and sometimes earlier than that. The game then becomes a race between those few civs to reach one of the victory types, in essence. That just limits the tactics down to that of survivor. Some of you may like that aspect, but the reality is that a civ that is king of the world, in one era, could be replaced in the next, and then return in full force in a later era. There is no real balance that leads to the type of game. Numerous factors can play into that, such as resources and map location, along with a few other hidden factors that may be a bit more complex. And I understand that. I don't know. Maybe it is just me. Honestly, though, is it really any fun when you have a good idea of who the winner is going to be by the time you get 50 turns into the game? I have heard others, including the guy in your interview, mention that they hardly make it to the later stages of the game as they already know the outcome by the time they get halfway through. Doesn't that say that there is something wrong within the game flow department?
Not sure what interview he's referring to. Karch may have talked about that, because in the last episode I included part two of Karch talking about the Beyond the Sword democracy game.
Yeah.
But I think towards what you're talking about there, I think, again, Rise and Fall mod would be advantageous to you, because if I recall correctly, in that game yourself, you can start off as one particular civilization, and then as another one develops, if you want to, you can switch over, taking over that civilization, and then watch what happens with the AI does with the civilization that you started.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you can turn China into a juggernaut and then swap over to save Inca or something. Just for fun.
On another side note, I also have to state that I hate the fact that you can only found colonies across water. Really, foreign borders should count as well. In other words, say that you are on a major peninsula of a major continent. The peninsula can support your civ enough on its own, but you found cities deeper in the mainland. Another civ comes along and completely divides you from those settlements, forcing you to open borders with them so that you can travel between. As time goes by, you decide that the cost of the other cities is too much and you want to liberate them. However, when you do, the only option is for them to join a nearby civ instead of creating a new, separate one. To me, if you are completely separated by another civ's borders, which can essentially act like an ocean, you should be able to liberate them as a colony just as you would if they were across the sea. To me, it just takes away from the whole colony aspect.
I think we've also mentioned that before. I am open for all consideration on how to make colonies more useful in Civ 4. I miss how they were handled in Civ 3, like you could have a colony on a particular resource, and you'd need a unit there to defend it, and as long as it was connected by a road, for instance, then you would have access to that. And I think there is room, again getting back to gameplay balance, for both approaches in a single Civ game, where you can have colonies in that respect like we see in Civ 3. And in Civ 4, only perhaps a bit more developed, for I myself have yet to find sufficient reason enough to spin off any part of my empire as a colony.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't mind having colonies back so I didn't have to build some little hole in the water down up in the tundra just so I can get the fur or the oil that's up there.
Yeah, makes sense.
All that frickin' maintenance.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a stupid beaver.
Yeah.
Well, the oil's not so stupid, but yeah.
Yeah, they should have more options in that regard. I mean, it seems a little bit silly to me that in order to get a proper colony situation, you have to, like, say, I'm going to spin off part of my empire into a new country. I mean, how often does that really happen?
A lot.
Like, you know, the United States. King George just clicked a button on his desk, and all of a sudden the United States was a country. We all know that's how it happens.
See? Sal, there is realism in Civ. Ha ha!
You know, I wouldn't mind if I did have a bunch of cities on the other side of the sea. I wouldn't mind if they started rebelling and I had to either put it down or let them break away and make their own country. That wouldn't bother me. That's one aspect of realism I could live with.
Well, yes, because then you could go and attack them.
Excellent.
XP, woohoo!
Expellent?
Expellent. I think we found a title for this episode.
Anyway, that's just a few things off of my chest. I've heard the realism versus gameplay debate many times, and I feel that many of the arguments against realism are often just a matter of preference. Now, don't get me wrong. I've heard a number of realism suggestions that I would have to balk at and side with the gameplay as well. But for most of them, they are completely plausible and could, in fact, enhance gameplay if they are implemented correctly. All I say is, don't knock it until you've tried it and just give me the option. No, I don't hate you guys, and I enjoy the banter, the debates, the off-the-wall comments, the top 10 lists, and Macahula telling Dan no singing.
There's a good reason I tell him that.
Everybody likes that.
I have a personal request to make of Dan Q. Will you hum the Star Trek theme?
No.
No humming either.
Will you whistle?
Which Star Trek theme?
No, this was discussed already. No humming, no whistling, nothing resembling tunes.
Will you alternate the pitch in your voice to mimic the Star Trek theme?
As long as he doesn't try to do the original series theme with the "oh" bit.
That's what I thought he was referring to, actually.
That would probably be funnier.
No, definitely don't sing that. Don't hum it, don't whistle it, don't mumble it.
I'll let you do the Next Generation if you want, Dan.
That's just the theme from Star Trek The Motion Picture.
And Star Trek V.
Hey. No.
There you go.
Stop.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy, that made my day.
I can't ignore requests, Mac, particularly from an emergency returning guest co-host. That would just be rude.
Yes, you can.
It's only Alexander. Come on.
That's what they say on the staff, too. It's only Alexander. Let's hit him with a pain stick.
But he likes that.
Hopefully, you will take my response into consideration and share my voice. Even though you may knock it behind my back. Regardless, I will continue to fight for a synth that all can love.
What? We never make fun of people. What are you talking about?
Is this the part where we make fun of the people who aren't here?
Imran.
We're not going to mock you, but Imran would if he was here.
I will not give up on sending my resume into Firaxis. Despite my lack of experience, I'm an IT by trade and have already applied there for an IT-related position. In hopes of getting my foot in the door. Sadly, the closest I came was having Mrs. Meyer tell me over the phone, "Sorry, that position has already been filled, but now I am going for my Bachelor's of Science in Game Art and Design and I will try again. At least, if anything, maybe it will give me enough training to tackle the archaic and very limiting editor. I'm a designer, not a programmer. Until then, keep on simming and I'll see you around the net. Sal Thurburn, Sirio."
Well, Sal, thanks again for your email. We hope that we have responded reasonably to all of the points that you have made, and that even if you don't agree with us, that we did take your letter seriously. And by all means, feel free to follow up, write in again, and keep on listening to the show.
We like emails like that. It gives us something to talk about.
Yeah, it means Dan doesn't have to find quite as many topics, which is always sweet.
Excellent.
Here's what's been making news in the Civ community.
Firaxis sponsoring a Civilization IV colonization modding contest running from October the 8th to December 17th. To give an even bigger incentive to the modding community out there, Firaxis will be giving away a brand new desktop computer and copies of Colonization signed by the development team to the winners of the contest, limit of 5 for a team. Quote, "We want to see your best unique modifications to the core game, no scenarios in any of the following 4 categories, new in-game assets, new colonial power civilizations, map scripts, and game concept changes. Mont's emissions will be judged on the following equally weighted judging criteria: technical merit, originality, and artistic merit. In the event of a tie, the highest score in the originality category will determine the winner. Potential winners will be notified by the sponsor, that being Firaxis and 2K, by email on or about January 7th, 2009, and will be required to sign and return some legal documents within 10 calendar days. Incidentally, the contest is open to U.S. residents only, age 13 and over, as of the date of entry. What I find most interesting about this restriction, because this restriction in general, I wouldn't call it interesting, the states that are excluded: Arizona, Maryland, North Dakota, and Vermont. Sorry, Tony, a.k.a. Garrett Sidzaka, because you live in Arizona, you cannot enter, one of our modcast co-hosts. Sorry to those of you living in the state where Firaxis is located, which is Maryland, because you can't enter.
They just really don't like maple syrup. But Arizona, that's odd. Is it just to get back at Garrett Sidzaka?
I think so. What comes to mind first and foremost is, again, U.S. resident only restriction. Come on. Although I don't think that's a Firaxis decision. I gotta believe that's a 2K decision.
Yeah.
And has a lot of legal issues. This is, I think, probably the other problem.
Well, and it's, if you're modding Colonization, then you get a free copy of Colonization.
Yeah, that too.
I would say someone who did or worked on a Colonization mod, not getting another copy of Colonization would probably not be a big deal.
But the new copy's signed.
eBay.
I think it'll be fun. I bet we'll get some really interesting mods out of it.
And some very angry modders. Like Garrett.
In every single modder that's in Europe.
I'm sure they have a lot to say about this.
Or Australia.
Yeah, anywhere that's not the U.S.
So good luck to all of those who enter and can't enter into the contest. And if you heard about the contest through Polycast and you want to send us some goodies, by all means.
Like a new desktop computer?
Sure.
Is it autographed?
New Civilization Revolution downloadable content for both the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3. For as you've no doubt heard, either on Polycast or elsewhere, there is no downloadable content for the DS version. It actually was released on October 9th, just a couple of days prior to this recording. A free single-player map pack, Brave New Worlds, and then a scenario pack called the Victory Pack. It is available for $1.25 US and some other conversions, or 100 Microsoft points on Xbox Live.
$1.25? What a ripoff! Oh, just kidding.
What's caused some ire, particularly on the 2K forums on this topic, is not the free single player pack, but rather the scenario pack and the downloadable content charging for that. Some people have been saying, what's going on here? There have been issues with the game that 2K and Firaxis have yet to fix, and here they are releasing downloadable content, and they're charging people for it.
Well, that's not ultimately Firaxis' decision about the charging. It's up to Microsoft, because they run Xbox Live. Bethesda, who made Oblivion, had the same problem with downloadable content for Oblivion. They could have let it free for the PC, but they had to charge on the Xbox. So instead of letting one side have it free and the other side charging, they just charged both.
That makes sense.
And dollars.
Yeah, so don't blame Firaxis, blame Microsoft.
Well, I've often thought Bill Gates was the devil, and I guess it's just more proof. Is this something that's becoming very common in that type of gameplay? The Xbox Live, because if it is, I guess we should have expected it. If it isn't, I guess I'll just be even more pissed.
I think Halo has downloadable maps and things like that that they charge for, too. I think a couple of other games do that. It's not new to Xbox Live or anything. It's something they started, I think, at least a couple of years back. So it's not new to games. It's just new to strategy games, I guess.
Don't think of it as paying $1.25 for three scenarios. Think of it as paying about 42 cents for a single scenario. See? That's not so bad now, is it?
It's now much, much worse.
I feel better already.
Got news? Email news@apolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, or one of the other news editors.
to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
From Civ Fanatics, something about the theology slingshot. Basically, it looks like they're talking about when you build the Oracle, make sure you're set up to go straight to theology. This was from Tucker Cad. Basically, he says, early theology guarantees me the AP and Christianity, obviously, since theology opens up paper and is relatively cheap. He can also snag the University of Sancor. He plays the Ramses because the religious buildings are cheap, and they give the huge bonus to hammers and research per city. Then he proceeds to go on to Gunpowder and finds that he can steamroll every civ on his continent. And he feels, I guess, that this is a very good strategy to do well in Civilization. Thoughts, everyone?
Yes.
I've never tried this before.
I have jumped to theology before, but that was because I had an extra great profit that I didn't know what to do with. And hey, look, you can research theology. Well, okay, jump.
Sure thing.
One thing he does say is that a downside to this strategy is you're very vulnerable to an early rush, so if you get shocked as your neighbor, you should probably change plans. LOL.
Yeah, assuming you don't play random traits, because maybe Shaka would be very friendly then.
Yeah, just like Montezuma can be really friendly. He gives you a big hug with Jaguar Warriors.
Then Gandhi comes up and murders you.
It's a sneaky little...
Sneaky little what?
Something, something.
Imran. Sneaky little Imran.
I don't know. Has anyone tried this strategy?
I don't play with strategy.
How do you play with kittens?
Oh. I have a kitten.
The kitten strategy. Nice strategy. We'll try that. Because apparently we don't try the right kind of strategy.
I can't say that I've tried this with thinking along going this path. I believe I've taken theology before as my free technology from the Oracle slingshot, but that's mainly when I go with the Oracle slingshot, I just take whichever tech I get that has the most research points needed to get it. Obviously, if you're the most advanced tech-wise in Civ, you're probably going to come up with some way to win. So I guess I've done it before, but I've never really thought about it in these terms, and it just might be something I want to try in my next single-player game. Something like this is going to be real tough, though, if you're playing a multiplayer game or if you're playing in a democracy game, which is pretty much the thing that I like to do at a poly nowadays, because I think you're just leaving yourself open too early to an early rush, just like he said. Because when you're playing with other humans as opposed to playing with the AI, you've really kind of got to watch your back and make sure that you can make some sort of a military comeback if you have to, because everybody's usually out to cut your throat early.
Isn't that a multiplayer rule? Don't play nice with others?
Exactly.
If you were playing for the Tri-League tournament for Diplomatic Win or the Game of the Month over at Civ Fanatics, this might be a really good way to get the Apostolic Palace to get a really early victory. Diplomatic, I mean.
And that, again, you know, it might be a really good way to go in that direction in a single-player game.
Sometimes it's a lot easier just to build a huge stack and go smashing.
And, you know, quite frankly, that's usually what I do. If I'm in a slingshot, I'm going to go get something like metal casting so I can build forges and then build up a huge pile and just go kill some stuff.
Only in Civ, of course, right?
Nowadays, yes.
You want peace? Prepare for war. If you want war, prepare for peace.
There you go.
I have been married for 20 years, though, so that may have some application in real life.
In a way, I just found it interesting that he said that he could pull this off roughly 95% of the time on Monarch. I'd be interested to know what map type he's playing as. Maybe he's just by himself, but I would think that really anything above Noble, the AI is going to be considerably more aggressive in that. You know, he says the downside is that you're very vulnerable to an early rush. I'd figure that that would be almost a given unless you had some civs that were close by and were not particularly aggressive. I would think that this might even be a strategy that would be more welcoming and likely to succeed on lower difficulty levels.
Lower difficulty levels and probably spread out maps.
Yeah, if you've got a continent by yourself, well.
So he plays on the largest size with only, like, two other civs?
I've done that.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at polycast@apolton.net.
For more information on Polycast, our sibling show Modcast, or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at polycast.apolton.net.
You didn't know that? Everybody knows.
You would know that, Alex, if you listened to the show.
I must have missed that episode. You know, for the first while, I was listening to the show.
Until I got on the show, and then he stopped.
No, I mean, like, when Cardi was first recording on the show, I could listen, because it was in my house.
Oh, he got the preview, unedited version.
Steven?
Yes?
Would you agree to do the show again?
Say no and run away.
Yes, I would, but it'd be a lot easier if I could get my wife out of the house.
Oh, well, that is a compound problem, isn't it?
Did she hear that? Are you going to pay for that one?
It doesn't matter if she heard it or not. I'll pay for it anyway. This has been fun. I've enjoyed it.
How long have you been listening to the show?
I have not listened to every podcast, but probably listened to, I don't know, a dozen of them or so since the beginning.
You may be wondering why it looks like Anna Lee and Alex are speaking from the same feed. That's because it's magic. Oh, no, wait. It's actually because they are in the same location. They are married.
It is magic.
My condolences to the both of you.
Wow.
Wow.
I have a lot of levity when it comes to marriage.
We've been married for almost two.
Wow, Polycast has been around for almost 2 years. Wouldn't that be great if Polycast, you and Alex, shared the same anniversary?
No, it would not.
Thank you for listening to Polycast, an official podcast of a Polyton civilization site. This has been episode 55. We're here with Dan Q.
Quick thanks to everyone who voted for Polycast in the 2008 Podcast Awards. We will know later this month who the nominees are, the top 10 nominees are. So, fingers crossed. Rejected Polycast slogans. It's our podcast, and we'll poly if we want to. Poly want a podcast? And is that a poly in your pants, or are you just happy to hear us?
Oh my gosh.
Holy crap.
Shouldn't it be banana?
I mean, bye.
Moving on. Makalua.
I'm getting out of here before you people get really weird.
Too late.
Wait, before we get really weird?
Well, now that you've gotten really weird. Close enough.
Cardamandua.
I have a kitty. Oh, bye.
Con MCB 25.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. See you guys next time.
And I'm Alexander the First, boldly going where nobody really wants to go.
It's like, the hell?
It's actually too late. Dan's already been there and back.
Hey, Mom, I've just spent all of these hours modding this wonderful program. Will you just sign this little permission slip for me?
I don't know. Will my signing the permission slip take out the garbage? Yeah, no. All right, very well. I'll listen to the plebeians now and again. Nope. Did I say that out loud?
No. Yes.
I quit.
You will listen to Polycast forever. Resistance is futile. There's an idea of hell. Polycast 24/7. Oh. You open the game box. Please refer to the PDF file on the CD. Please refer to our website. For more information, please call our hotline. Oh.
Seriously.
Let's go ahead and go on to the Senate. I want to do the Senate.
Oh, I thought he was going to say the closing.
I purposely made that not one of the options.
All right, are we done?
We're done.
Okay, end transmission.
Hailing frequencies closed.
Make it so, number one.
Oh my gosh.
Nerd alert.
Engage!
No! Record date?
October 11th, 2008.
Sound clips, copyright Civilization IV, and the Warlords and Beyond the Sword expansion packs.
Email readings courtesy SpokenText.net.
Copyright 2008, a Polyton Civilization site at apolyton.net.